UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome, boys and ghouls, to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where we cover movies, remakes, and sequels. And joining me is the ever-changing Zach Moore. This time you kind of look like a weird animation style.
Yeah, I'm basically a skeleton in a hoodie, I think.
Okay, yeah, that looks about right. So,
hello!
Excellent. I don't know about you, but I'm super hungry. Did you, you want a hot dog?
No, I will not be eating hot dogs anytime soon. No. After watching this movie, no.
Well, I wonder if our guest might like some hot dogs here. Marcelo J. Pico from the Talk Film Society joining us to wrap up this amazing trilogy of movies.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, in quotes, for having me. And no, I'm not going to have this hot dog. I'm going to give it to this homeless person instead.
A very altruistic thing to do, Marcelo.
Absolutely. Yes. No other reason why.
Just make sure you drop it on the ground first.
Yes, yes.
Well, in case you haven't figured out what we're talking about, because chances are you probably haven't seen this movie that we're talking about.
Don't do it!
No, please
don't do it!
No.
I think that there's, like, 6 people on the planet who have seen it.
And half of them are right here.
And half of them are right here. So, Creepshow 3, made for HBO... not quite as good as Game of Thrones, but we will discuss it nonetheless. Zach, have you got some trivia for us?
I do, Brennan.
Really?
Do some trivia about Creepshow 3. So let's get into it. Creepshow 3, unlike Creepshow 2, have no involvement from Stephen King or George A. Romero, the creators of the Creepshow series, the movie series.
I would never have been able to figure that out.
Creepshow 3 also does not take its stories from the fictional Creepshow comic like we've seen in the previous 2 films. So there's a lot of a lot of disconnects between this and the first 2. Also, unlike the Stephen King, George A. Romero Creepshows, Creepshow 3 has CGI animation in place of traditional animation. So in those awkward kind of negative color transitions we see between stories, things that you see throughout the film. That's what they're talking about there. And in the first segment, Alice, and actually this is something that I thought was interesting because I thought it was a problem, but apparently it wasn't. When Alice uses what looks to be a rotary phone, but you hear beeping, like she's dialing a number, it's not a mistake. In actuality, there are phones designed to look like rotary phones, but they actually have push buttons. So,
you know what? When we're recording this, I actually just saw like a post going around on Facebook or whatever where some guy created a cell phone that works like a rotary phone.
But oh, I saw that too.
Yeah, I actually just saw this like the other day. I thought this was kind of funny.
I would love to have one of those, the kind of retro technology. It's like if you need a smartphone, but you don't want all the distractions.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. So, that doesn't surprise me because this movie has an incredible attention to detail and production value. So people think that's a mistake, but they're not giving the movie enough credit. So something like that would not slip through these guys' fingers. That's
no,
for sure.
No.
Slip by unnoticed. Now, according to the wedding invitation of the professor, the neighborhood in which all these stories takes place is called Creepyville. So very, very on the nose title for the town it takes place in. Also, one of the props in the radio, which is the second segment, is a bottle of Arrogant Bastard Ale at Andy's Kitchen. The slogan on the beer case reads, "You're not worthy," and this is an actual beer that is bottled in California. So,
I've had that beer. It's actually all right.
So you were worthy, Marcelo.
I was saying. Worthy. Very yes, good. Yes.
And in the segment Haunted Dog. Basically the last segment. The homeless person who is haunting the doctor He keeps saying thanks for the dog, man, and it's very similar to Creepshow 2. And the hitchhiker, where the hitchhiker who's killed, he says thanks for the ride, lady. So there is some, and there are some parallels between that those two stories as well.
Creepshow 2 did it better.
Yes, infinitesimally better. Yes, and Tales from the Dark Side, the movie from 1990, is often considered to be the true Creepshow 3 because George A. Romero and Stephen King contributed to that film and had nothing to do with this one. You know, so a lot of people in their head canon, that's the real Creepshow 3.
For me, yes, that is.
Well, does that mean we need to watch it for this podcast, Zach?
No, it's fine.
I would recommend it. I'm pretty sure I looked it up just now. Yeah, The Cat from Hell is there, the segment that was supposed to be in Creepshow 2, but it's in Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, and it's actually pretty good.
Well, Tales from the Dark Side is its own series, right? And there are series
Yes,
of movies?
which that show is also a spinoff of Creepshow. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of the same creative team behind Creepshow. They're like, oh, let's just do Creepshow the TV show and just call it Tales from the Dark Side. And I believe Creepshow 2's director also did work on that too. So yes, Tales from the Dark Side has a much bigger connection to Creepshow than this movie, in quotes, Creepshow 3. So yes, I can make that case that Tales from the Dark Side is the true follow-up to the first two Creepshows.
Well, this isn't the only Creepshow 3. Alex Wesley, a director, he shot a Creepshow 3 in 2001 on his VHS camera just for fun as a tribute to his two favorite films, Creepshow 1 and Creepshow 2. Due to the name of the film, temp music was taken from other films, and it was a very rough video quality, and it can never be released, but he's fine with that, Alex Wesley, because he's kind of embarrassed by his early effort when he made it with the teenagers and his friends. Wesley is a writer-director known for Freak in the Basement, Demon Mind, and Zombie Infection. I have never heard of any of those.
Me neither. So sure that version is better than this.
So,
is this a remake then? We got to seek that one out and see if this guy will let us watch it.
We can track down his VHS copy. Yeah, if we're talking about extra movies to watch, that would be one of the extra movies to watch. You know, that's really all the trivia that I had. But just for the listeners who probably won't see this film, I'll let you guys know there are basically six stories. There's a wraparound story, if you want to consider it that, like a prologue and an epilogue. The prologue is animated, the epilogue's not, but they're kind of connected, I guess, because of the replacement creep. Raoul the Ghoul is now a hot dog vendor. So he's in those two. But in between,
I mean, you
those.
Can't just go around creeping people all the time. You got to make some money, right?
That's true.
That's his day job.
So in between those, there is Alice, the radio, call girl, the professor's wife, and haunted dog. And those are your segments in Creepshow 3.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into the discussion of this film. I was amazed that you were able to find that much trivia on it, Zach. This movie is terrible. And I guess we'll just do what we did last time and just go at them one at a time. So let's start with the first one, Alice here. So I was very confused by this short. I don't understand why her moving back and forth through these dimensions was causing these weird tumors or whatever on her body. Could you explain that to me?
But was she turning back into a rabbit?
Used to be a rabbit? I don't know.
It seems that she used to be a rabbit that escaped and somehow turned into a girl.
What?
And her dad had a universal remote that changed her back and forth because it came from the crazy professor.
But then why did her family change into like Hispanic people and
because
black people?
Because one button controls the color. So the white family became black. One button controls the language. So the white family became Hispanic, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like the movie Click, Brandon. It's the remote control that can do anything.
Which one came first, this or Click? Did this movie, you know, inspire Click?
Clearly, we need to watch Click now.
Yeah, it's part of the Creepshow 3 universe.
The multiverse. God.
No, it was extremely confusing. It was really gross. I hated all the characters in it, and I was glad when it was over.
So, are we talking about the segment or the whole movie?
Yeah, so we have this really rude girl who's like the stereotypical TV show
bully. Oh my
god,
I hate it here, you know.
She's like throwing people's balls that are like accidentally bouncing on her and getting mad and talking to her friends, and she gets home and her family is weird and her brother is weird, and yeah, she deteriorates every time the dad's remote control pushed. Like, so her dad bought this used remote control for some guy in the street and he can't figure it out, and all of a sudden, yes, the family start changing every time he pushes buttons. I just don't get how she ended up becoming the rabbit at the end. I just don't understand. So at the end, she was turned into a rabbit named Alice in Wonderland, I guess. Like
White Rabbit, yeah. Clearly, that's the tie in there.
I'm guessing she turned into a rabbit because, well, didn't the remote control come from that professor, that crazy professor?
Yeah, let's zoom out a second. Let's zoom out a second. These are all interconnected stories,
right?
Somehow, and that's the only kind of interesting thing about this movie is that all these characters are in each other's stories. And on paper, that's kind of interesting conceptually. Right. In an anthology series, and execution is done horribly. But trace it back. The guy who sells the radios sells all kinds of stuff. We see a remote control like that on his stack.
Therefore, the radio actually takes place before.
Yeah, well, it's all connected. Yeah. And we find out at the very end that the professor is the one giving this street vendor all this stuff. So, ergo, the remote control did indeed come from the professor.
So, yeah, basically this movie's like Pulp Fiction, but crap.
the Sin City Pulp Fiction style of, it's all, you know, the characters, it can be done well. It's not done well here.
Right.
So, but does that answer your question? The remote control did indeed come from the professor.
Yeah, and even like the dad said in the first segment, oh, look at this control. Doesn't it remind you of like the professor's gadgets or something like that? Like a truly among the awful lines of the movie, a truly awful exposition line. Like, hey, this is all connected, right?
Yeah. So, okay, so let's, you know, before we go on to any more sections here, let's just pause for a second because...
and stop this podcast.
Let's just stop, okay? So, I want to know, like, I've got a lot of problems with this movie because this movie, they've made this, the people who have made this have no comprehension of what made Creepshow and Creepshow 2 great movies. Yeah. Like, in this movie... like, I would classify that they are trying to make a horror comedy, and there is nothing about Creepshow and Creepshow 2 that I would put under the category of horror comedy. There are maybe some comedic elements here and there, and you might be laughing at the silliness of the style of the filmmaking, right? And not because it's bad filmmaking, but it's the style that they're going for, like the over-the-top horror. Right? Like the way that like it you have these flashes of color like a comic book. It's a style of filmmaking. And I was laughing at that because it's like, oh, I know what they're doing here and this is fun. But in this, they're actively trying to do humor. And that's not what Creepshow is about at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. Well, I agree with you that I mean, why does this even exist with these people behind, you know, the creative wheel? We had a quick conversation, Brandon and I, before recording. I'm like, I want to know the backstory. I want to know how this came to be.
Yeah, I looked hard for that information. I did, for some reason, a lot of people don't are interested in behind the scenes.
Yeah,
information about this terrible movie.
My really quick guess assumption. Is that James Doodleson? I think that's how I pronounce his name. I could be completely wrong. The co-director of this. Mm-hmm. I see his credits. He also is an executive producer on the new Creepshow TV show. So I'm assuming he either bought the rights or is in charge of like the production company behind, you know, this they came and swooped in and got the rights when nobody was looking and made this movie. That's my assumption. And then that's why he got his name on the TV show. And I hope to God he didn't do anything beyond that than just have his name on that TV show. Mm-hmm. But anyway, why is this a thing? And also, why these people who don't understand the essence of Creepshow. Why are they doing it this way? Yeah, it completely wrong tonal vibe throughout the whole thing. Makes no sense to me. It should not be called Creepshow 3. It should be called something else completely. I don't know. Well, yeah, it's odd.
Creepshow 1982, Creepshow 2 1987, Creepshow 3 2006.
Yeah.
So it's like there's not even like this is 20 years later.
Okay,
like,
well that's not entirely fair, okay? Because Tron Legacy, how many years later did that come out?
Yeah,
almost
no, but
30.
But I'm saying the Creepshow movies have a vibe to them, Brandon. Have an mm-hmm. identity, you know, this 80s gore, this flashiness, right? They're kind of a time, and that's great. You know,
which they maintained in the Shudder series. They maintained that.
Well, no, and you can totally replicate that, absolutely. I'm not saying because it came later it's bad. I'm saying there's such a gap between the two. They didn't bother to try to replicate anything. They were like, some people with a camera in 2006 made a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
See, it's not the gap that bothers me. It kind of does. But also the fact that there was nobody, as far as I know...
no connective tissue. And behind
the scenes. Exactly. Nobody behind the creative team, nobody in the creative team on this movie, Creepshow 3, that was that had any hand in Creepshow 1, 2, Tales from the Dark Side, nobody. It wasn't until the TV show, until Shudder came, you know, and got the rights and got the TV show, and who was it, Greg Nicotero, who worked on, you know, Creepshow 2 and, like, worked with Romero and King. He came in and was like, "Yeah, I'll help, you know, steward this show because I was there. Like, I have this sense of like what we were trying to accomplish back then. So of course I'd be the perfect person to do it." Mm. Nobody. I mean, and to your point, Brandon, Tron Legacy. I mean, you even have Jeff Daniels back. I mean, there's some people who come back and make it connect. There's no connection here. Mm-hmm. No, nothing.
Like, can you think of another series of movies where a sequel would have happened, whether it's part 2 or part 3 or part 12, right, where by that point it's nobody is the same, but it still works as a movie because of, like, the what they put into it? Like, I don't really look too much into it beyond directors. Like, I'm interested in directors of films, and I'll follow a director's career. But beyond that, I don't really follow writers or producers or things like that.
I mean, if we're talking direct sequel... I don't know. I wish I were more into horror sequels because I just know the basics. I know. I wonder. I guess Friday the 13th would be an example because I'm assuming by like Jason X, there's a complete departure, right? Mm-hmm. From I think the creative team, or maybe I don't know. I have to look into it because it's been a while since I've seen those movies. I'm not sure if the original creators were still involved by that point. Probably not. Is my guess.
Usually there's a like even Halloween had Mustafa Akkad on the entire time. Like there's usually someone you can trace back.
And then when he unfortunately passed away, then his son came in and like the production company was still involved in like the future movies. So there's still, I mean, yeah. And even Friday the 13th, Paramount, you know, Studios was still behind it. This thing came out under HBO Home Video through Taurus Entertainment and Creepy Film Productions. I don't know what any of that is beyond HBO, so yeah. I can't think of a good example to compare a franchise installment that is like this far removed from its original, that's still with the same name, apparently. Right. The third part, it's still trying to connect to a series that has no right being connected to.
Mm-hmm. Like as I was saying before with the comedic elements, like when you get to the mail order bride segment, like legit watching that, I'm like, they want me to be falling off my seat with laughter. That is the goal of this skit. And I'm just like, not like it just, it didn't work. Like nothing about even that skit worked. And they were playing it for laughs, mm-hmm. you know? Which is missing. They're completely missing the point of Creepshow.
Well, Marcello, you had an excellent point. Like, I really did try to find some, like, how did Stephen King and Romero lose rights to this? But mm-hmm. there's no, I found no, like, trail of evidence in how it went from, like, this studio, these directors, this creative team, to, like, oh, anyone can just make a movie out of it. Mm-hmm. Because you think there'd be some protection of the IP, and there's zero here, and that shows.
Yeah. And then, like, another part that completely misses what Creepshow is they've tried to make this, like, a Pulp Fiction style where everything is connected, and the other Creepshows didn't have that either.
No.
There may have been like the ashtray, like you said, but that's just an in-joke, is something to watch for. Where this, like, there's an act of these characters show up. You see actual scenes from different perspectives in different skits. So characters are intertwined, and characters are intertwined in every single story. So basically, all of these stories are pretty much taking place at the exact same time as well. Like, it's really weird. Like, it's trying to be it's something completely different. It's trying to be something completely different than what they are, and it's kind of frustrating. So,
yeah, like, that for me, I'm not sure if we're still going segment by segment, but I just want to jump real quick to the Professor's Wife segment, which is maybe the most infuriating of them all. To your point, like,
yeah, that's Brandon, the one that I was saying where, like, the mail order bride, I called it, but the Professor's Wife,
Then we're talking about the same thing. I just want to reiterate that is bad.
Oh my goodness,
that joke that they're going for of them thinking like it's a robot or something and then tearing it, it's terrible.
For the listeners that haven't seen, we'll quickly explain what this means. So we'll go in order on these ones here. So we've talked about Alice, we'll talk about the professor's wife. So the professor from the first one, he's a teacher at the local school, and he's getting married, and he invites these two awesome favorite students of his to his house to meet his bride,
who, by the way, look 40 years old.
And They're convinced that the professor has actually created like a robot wife. And so for some reason the professor has to leave the house and leave these two men with the wife to go get something from the store, and they decide to take her apart and figure out how he put her together, because she has no memory. She's like, I don't remember how I met him. I don't have any memory beyond like X amount of days ago, or whatever she says in this thing. I'm sorry, I don't remember the details. And they literally start hacking her apart in the kitchen. And it's a while before they're all like, oh, look at how realistic this
hand realistic.
Looks.
Ah.
So realistic. Look at all this wonderful oil. It looks just like blood. And after they've completely torn her apart and pulled her brain out of her skull, they realize that she's a human and they've just murdered her. And then they go through this slapstick routine of hiding the body parts in like every drawer and cupboard they can
American
possibly
Psycho
find.
Style.
Sure. Yeah, or Mr. Bean when he's trying to hide the raw hamburger that he bought.
Mr. Bean!
Mr. Bean did it better, okay? So
now I'm just imagining Mr. Bean as a serial killer.
Oh, that would be amazing. I want to see that.
I want that movie. I want that sequel. Yeah.
Anyways, so okay, go ahead. Anyway, so that sums up the story. Oh, and then to make matters worse, at the end of it, when the professor comes home and opens the oven,
she's
and
in
he
the
sees
oven.
The head in there.
Disgusting.
And he's just like, oh, well.
Okay, I want to bring this up too. So, yes, we've talked about how the comedy in this does not work at all. Beyond cringeworthy. Just idiotic. What I loved about the first two, and it's gone here, is, and we talked about this, you know, maybe too in depth, I think, just the how it's like, yes, it's like an attack on like capitalism, and there's some underlying theme there about, evil being thwarted with evil, you know, how the you know, quote unquote, bad people get their comeuppance, you know, on varying degrees, you know, from like an annoying wife to, you know, actual evil, you know, capitalist pigs, you know, get what they deserve in the first two. There's no purpose here in Creepshow 3. The people who get killed and murdered, especially this the wife here, there's no reason for her to get killed, but beyond just a stupid joke. So.
Because it's funny, Marcello.
It's. I mean, if it didn't. Of course, it didn't work back then. Of course, it's not going to work in 2020. So it's awful. It's bad.
Yeah.
Nothing. Zach. Nothing dates poorer than bad comedy.
Yes.
So rewinding back, you know, Alice, we talked about that one. The teenage girl devolves into a rabbit, basically.
She got what she deserved, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
She was mean, so she deserved to get melted and turned into a rabbit, because she was a mean teenager,
And their whole family forgets she existed as well. Just
except for the mom, as we find out in another segment.
Yeah, at the very end, the mom still remembers her, but So moving on.
Actually, before we move on, we might as well talk about the epilogue because it pertains to the professor's wife.
That actually, it pertains to both what we were talking about. Yes,
I'm glad we're jumping around like the movie jumps around. See?
Exactly. Yeah. We're giving you the same experience you get watching Creepshow exactly. 3 because you're not going to get it because you're not going to watch it. Please don't.
Please don't.
This is just like watching the movie. Okay.
Yeah. Except it's more enjoyable. Yes. So the epilogue, the professor somehow put this woman back together again and then marries her.
But she's still falling apart, isn't it?
But she's
funny?
Still falling. Is this supposed to be like Frankenstein's bride or something like that, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, because she throws the bouquet when they leave the church and her hand goes with it. He's like, oh, you're such a jokester. And they get in the car and her eyes start bleeding and Alice the rabbit is there in the back seat for some reason. And
then we cut to the family from the beginning one.
Yeah, and the mom's like, oh, Alice is going to have such a great wedding. And then the family talks to the priest like, she still thinks we have a daughter. And it's like,
yeah,
isn't that funny?
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's go to the radio. So in the radio, there's a guy who buys a used radio from the guy in the street where everybody's buying everything else. And this radio starts talking to him and basically telling him to steal money from this local pimp and then
kill someone who sees him. Like it gets more and more intense as it goes on.
Yeah. Hilarity ensues.
Although I kind of liked the concept of this one. Again, the execution for all these is horrible.
This is the best of the five.
Yes. Yes. I agree. Marcel, what do you think? What do you think of the radio? Is it the best of the five? Do you agree?
I'm going to be honest here. Kind of dozed off during this one.
I don't blame you.
Well,
but okay, but
best is a relative term when we're talking about this movie.
But I'm actually watching it again here now on mute, like as we're recording. And okay, the main concept I think is like good, right? I mean, the how it ends is also kind of sinister. I like that too. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, I wish it were in a better movie. And also, hey. If it's the same A.J. Bone I'm thinking of, who is the star of this segment, didn't he go on to like co-star in like other like horror films that are of note after that? I think A.J. Bone. I can look him up real quick, but that's a surprise that he's in this.
Well, A.J., let me just put this in perspective. A.J. Bone is the only actor on the Wikipedia page for Creepshow 3 that actually has a link to take you to more on him.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, so I just looked it up. He's in The Guest. He's in You're Next. He's in The Sacrament. He has a legitimate career. He's the only one from this movie production that went on to have an actual career. So, yeah, you know, if you take all that into account, minus me being dozy throughout this segment, yes, I think you could make a good case of this being the best one out of the however many there are in this movie.
Right, and part of the reason why I would say that it's the best of them is because this one actually felt like it could have been something from the original, because it is a horror concept that you've seen before. Some type of haunted something is talking to its owner, convincing it to do bad things. We've seen this in horror stuff before. Radios, stuffed animals, photographs, things like this, where it like convinces somebody to do something because they hear a voice.
You know what it reminded me of, Brandon, in the episode of The X-Files with the tattoo?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. With Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster did the voice of the tattoo, so... Yes, we've seen this before as well. But yes, I heavily thought of it, the X-Files as well.
But these are all
the radio...
bad people, and the radios are all playing them against each other. And I found that interesting. Like you think it's just this one radio, and the quote unquote hero character, is the security guard. He's using it. There's a prostitute who lives in this building. He wants to save her. The radio says, "I'll kill her. She's gonna kill you." He smashes the radio, but the radio was right. She did kill him, but then her pimp kills her, and he has his own radio telling him what to do. So I that was twisted, dark, felt like an EC comic on some level. So
yeah.
So the radio was like Yojimbo, right? Playing the sides against each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this is brilliant. This is amazing.
Well, no, is it the same essence in different radios, or is it different radios working against each other? See, there's so many themes here you can delve into.
Oh my gosh.
Are we all part of a big radio scheme in this world? We're all listening to our own radios with our own self-interest in mind that conflict with other radios and their self-interests. Think about it.
Well, my iPad convinced me to watch this movie, so yes.
We're giving this a lot more credit than I think the writers.
Well, the fact that we could even go that deep, even joking, says more for this story than any of these others, because there's literally nothing else.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, I don't know what we can possibly say about Haunted Dog or Call Girl.
Yeah. So Call Girl is next.
Well, hold on. Did you catch the connection in this one? The cop is the dad from the first one.
Oh, wow. Ooh. And he's still an idiot here. He's just... Yeah. I mean, everyone's an idiot, really, in this whole movie, but that's his shtick. Oh, I'm a cop. Do you have any more milk? Terrible. So bad.
So, Call Girl. So, we've got a prostitute who, like, goes around and murders people.
And she's the same prostitute that the pimp and the radio was saying, get out of my building. You don't work here. That kind of
stuff. Oh, the connections
are so deep.
It's all connected.
So clever. 3D chess this movie's playing with us, let me tell you.
So, she gets called to a house. And when she gets to the, like, a guy calls her up and says, oh, hey, you want to come and have a date with me? And we think he's some kind of nerdy guy. But then when the prostitute walks into the house and talks to the two boys in the street that are from the professor's wife episode, which comes after this, she goes in and there's, like, dead bodies hanging in the kitchen. So it's
she doesn't see them.
But she doesn't see them. So it's like,
although I did like how... there were no pictures of the guy, and she's like, why aren't there pictures of you? Like, I liked that beat, at least.
Yeah, because it like puts some, I don't know, sure.
But she's a prostitute serial killer.
She
has a glove compartment full of knives.
Yeah.
Does that.
Yeah. So then she, like, starts to torture this guy and kills him. And then we find out that, nope, he's not just a serial killer. He's some kind of vampire.
He's a monster of some kind. Marcelo, what kind of monster did you think this guy was?
I mean, he's not a vampire because he came out the next day in bright daylight. So I hate that it makes no effort to explain what he is. He's just a monster. That's
it.
For
no reason.
No reason. Yeah. And then, yeah, the monster kills her and...
And
that's it.
End.
That's the end.
I've got a theory. I've got a theory. Are you ready for this?
We're ready.
Based on his mouth and how many teeth he had, I think he's the love child of the ape-like thing from the crate and Billy.
I'm here for it. I can see it.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing in that crate. That's why I was moving around so much.
There you go.
I did think about it. The mouth was similar to the ape monster in Creepshow. So,
grasping at straws, we are.
Yeah, then he goes out and he has like a goes out for a golf game at the end, waving at neighbors. It's like, what is this?
I don't know.
There's a whole group of monsters like him, as we find out in the last story. They all hang out in this club, right?
Is that the thing? Did I miss that?
Yeah, because
it's in Haunted Dog.
It's in Haunted Dog. The doctor's I got some pills. And like, the real party starts. And they all are kind of like him. And he's like, I need new faces. And is that because he has to change faces because he's a serial killer? It's not very well thought out. But Call Girl.
I guess, there it is. Everybody in Creepyville is just some sort of like twisted psychopath killer.
It's a Creepyville.
Monster. Yeah, it's a Creepyville.
This should have been called Crappyville.
Should be called Crap Show. That's what the name of this one is.
Crap Show 3.
Crap Show 3. Okay, so Haunted Dog.
Well, the
so
professor's wife we talked about.
Yeah, we talked about the professor's wife. That was next.
And then Haunted Dog is after this, yes.
This doctor is like a really bad doctor.
No, it's a reveal, guy. You're selling it short, Brett. It's a slow burn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a jerk on the street, and he's being a jerk to people, and he gets a hot dog, and he drops his hot dog. There's a homeless guy that wanted some food or money from him earlier, so he's like, oh, this is perfect. I'm going to give this homeless guy this hot dog, act like I'm a good guy. Then he cuts in front of everyone else, gets another hot dog for himself, walks off. But the hot dog he dropped was obviously dropped into something gross because the homeless guy...
was covered in sand or something.
Yeah, the homeless guy dies immediately from eating it, and they're like... Oh no, someone's choking. We need a doctor. And our quote unquote main character or hero character. Right?
Who is a doctor, yeah.
It's a reveal though, because he's just being a jerk and he walks in and where does he work? He's a doctor. It's brilliant.
I think he said previous to that he was a doctor. Like he had a
did
line
he?
That yeah,
I'd
he did.
Oh
yeah.
Man. See, I give the movie too much credit. I thought
Yeah. But See, here's the thing. Okay, so then after that, so then we learn how bad a doctor he is because he's like sexually assaulting his patients and like, you know, he has no bedside manner. And
also,
though,
you can tell the budget of this movie is horrible because they even have budget to like get in patients
extras.
Because there's a shot of him. It's just jump cuts. Like, oh, here you go. Yeah. You're out of here. You're gonna die soon. Da da da. And like, it's like, come on, guys. Can we have a two shot of him talking to another person? Terrible.
Yeah. So then, and then he starts getting haunted by this dead guy with the hot dog, and he's like showing him the hot dog.
It's a really bad special effect, by the way.
Yeah, very very bad. And I don't even know what happens.
Well,
the end
now there was a beat. No, there was a beat in here. I thought, oh. Are they going to actually have this guy turn his life around because he's haunted by this guy? Because it's when, I don't know if you guys thought this might happen or not, but it's when the guy comes in with his daughter and it's like, you have a brain tumor. And he like gets serious for a second. He looks out there and the ghost is there. I'm like, oh, he's going to see that he needs to stop being a jerk and help people. Right. But then he just goes back to beat himself like, oh, did she have a senior prom? She's a junior. Well, I'll take her to one this weekend because she's going to die. Yeah. And did you guys pick up on that? Did you think there might be a turn of the character there? Or was I just looking for something that was never going to happen?
No way. There was no way he was going to.
But there was a beat. There was a beat there.
There was
happen.
A beat. But this is... In their lame attempt at making a Creepshow movie... There is no way there's going to be a sincere moment in this. There's no
true,
room for
very
it.
Very true.
Yeah.
See, I know how they could have made this better then, is if he would have turned his life around there, then they could, like, he would have been a better doctor, and we could have finished this movie on a happy note, and then they could have called this segment, It's a Wonderful Hot Dog.
Perfect.
There you go.
One thing they should have honestly done
Zuzu's is Petals!
They should have cut it down from 30 minutes to, like, 10 minutes, because, geez, I don't know why this movie... First is like as long as it is. Creepshow 2 was it had three segments, but still streamlined like 90 minutes. Perfect. Mm. This is an hour and 40 minutes of pain.
Drags.
That 10 minutes is way too much.
But you can't cut one segment, Marcel. They're all interconnected. It's a tapestry. If you pull on one thread, the whole thing falls apart.
It's us pulling on something is not the reason this movie's falling apart.
But yeah, so. I guess that's our flyover of the movie. What?
Okay, well, let me ask
garbage.
You this question here, okay? So let's go back for a second, okay? I'm just going to try and look at something to talk about for the segment. I don't think this guy's responsible for that bum dying because all he did was, like, he's a dick for giving him the dirty hot dog, right? But it's like... I don't know, the guy, if I was a bum and somebody gave me a dirty hot dog, I don't know if I'd eat it, but I mean, I'm not a homeless individual, so I guess I don't know. But even still, like, the guy just choked on a hot dog, which happens to people, and then this guy's haunting him, showing him a hot dog, I don't know.
So, yeah, it's a terrible concept initially. Yeah. I mean, I just rewatched it in the background, and like, yeah, this doctor drops it, picks it up, there's dirt on it, just dirt, nothing else beyond that. Not like a rock or anything, you know? And then this guy, the homeless guy, just, you know, swallows it whole almost, then chokes. I think we're to assume that because the doctor dropped it, that this guy died? Or it doesn't make it clear. Maybe the homeless person just couldn't chew properly. I don't know. It's the movie's fault. But I guess we're led to believe that, yes, because the doctor... is just a terrible person beyond that he deserves what he gets. But no, the initial concept of him giving a homeless guy a dirty hot dog and the homeless guy dying because of that, not well executed.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
the mystery of the hot dog.
I think, you know, zooming out, looking at all these stories, all jokes aside about them being interconnected, you delete Alice, you delete the professor's wife for sure. Right, both of those gone. And that leaves you with the radio, call girl, and haunted dog. Again,
it's still terrible.
I'm saying if you take those three and you make better versions of those three, then I think you could have a decent horror anthology movie.
Probably. I would agree with that. I mean, if those three stories, I think with better hands, yeah, it would work. It's just those the interconnecting story of that professor. and these like bumbling idiots in the outskirts.
Yeah, and delete the epilogue and prologue too, because this animated skeleton in a hoodie kills some dog and turns into hot dogs.
Or just have the professor be the creep in some way. Like have him be like the underlying person who kind of just motivates these stories in a better way, not just like a evil, you know, jokey professor. I don't know.
That's a whole other thing. In the professor's wife, like, oh, you know those pranks he plays, like exploding sandwiches and remote control cars he kills people with. And it's like, oh, at it again. I'm like, you guys know he's murdering people.
Like, see, that's the thing. In a way, he is kind of like, you know, the creep, the professor, but it's not taken seriously. It's not like giving any more thought than like, oh, let's just make this wacky guy who is connected to every story just a wacky professor who kills people.
Well, but what it comes back down to is what you guys have already said. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what made this franchise what it was. And it's a shame this is connected to the other two. Because it's a serious, serious dark stain on the name.
Yes. Yeah, now, let's just...
I mean, again, just call it, like, Creepyville. Call it anything else.
Call it Creepyville. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Would have been perfect.
Now, aside from quality, okay, I do want to bring this up and ask you for the comparison. Because we've got this... And we've got Halloween 3. So not comparing quality of films, because I think all of us here appreciate Halloween 3 on some level.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Halloween 3, it's not necessarily like that one is a misunderstanding of what the Halloween franchise is. It's like they're like, we wanted to make it an anthology series of movies, but they put it in the wrong spot because they'd already continued the story of the success of Michael Myers with Halloween 2, and so that's why Halloween 3 feels like such a misstep. But Halloween 3 is at least a decent film. So I don't know where I want to go with that, but I did want to bring up because this is a third movie where it's just not what the other two were.
In all honesty, I'd give this movie how do I even put this into words? If this had like a producer credit from Stephen King or Romero, you know, in some fashion, I'd give it some more thought, right? But I can't imagine them putting their name on this.
Because Carpenter was associated with Halloween 3, was he?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. He was a producer. I think he did the music too.
Correct.
For Halloween 3. So yeah, I mean, it's that stamp of approval, you know. And I know Romero, at this point in his career, what was it, 2000, you know, mid-2000s?
2006, yeah.
2006. I mean, well, didn't he just do, he did Land of the Dead, which is actually really good. So, like, he still has it in him, you know, and I can't imagine him putting his name on something this bad into the mid-2000s. And if he was involved, he'd make it at least worth watching. Yeah. So, that's how I see it. Like, if, there is no way in hell he'd put his name on something this bad. And it's kind of like Halloween 3, where Carpenter, he had money coming in too, so that's the reason why he just stuck around for the Halloween stuff and you know, did the music. Yeah, but in a way, yeah, he wouldn't put his name on something, you know, that terrible. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's my point, I guess. Yeah, going back to that point we made before, with there being no connective tissue to the first two, or even like the outskirt projects, you know, Tales from the Dark Side. We got this, and it's not Creepshow to me.
Nope.
Do we want to do death count next?
I do. How many deaths do you guys think happen in this movie?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you how many segments there are in this movie.
I'm going to guess 10.
I'll guess 15.
Okay, you guys have it surrounded. It's 12.
Okay.
Oh, nice. We have the dog who dies at the opening. We have Jerry who dies. We have the prostitute who dies. We have the proselytizer, who the killer prostitute, Rachel, kills. We have the family of three, so that brings us to six, who Victor kills. We have Victor, who is killed by Rachel. That's seven. We have Rachel, who is killed by Victor. That's eight. We have the professor's wife. That's nine. We have the homeless hot dog guy. That's 10. And then we have the... doctor, that's 11. Oh, those numbers are for people. So 11 people and then plus one for the dog, which means 12. So there you have it. So that's a total of 12 deaths in Creepshow 3, which brings us to a franchise total of 42 deaths. That's a lot of death for three movies.
Yeah,
that's a lot of death. Marcelo, let's start with your rating. What would you give this movie out of 5 creeps?
1 out of 5.
1 out of 5.
I'm not going to rate it 0 if that's even possible.
Well, I'm going to give it 1/2 a creep. So you can do that.
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah. I'll give it some. Okay. Because my bottom is like somewhere around like Birdemic.
Very similar to this.
But I will say, you know, Birdemic to me is like a 0.5 only because it's made terribly. The sound is terrible. The picture quality is terrible. At least this has some production value. I will admit, as dumb as some of the horror effects, you know, the reason behind them are, at least some of them are practical and like kind of, you know, are fun to look at sometimes. I don't know. I'll give it some credit, but only like 0.5's worth of credit. Other than that, yeah, no, 1 out of 5. I don't know. I mentioned in the other episodes, there are plenty of other horror anthologies to watch. Watch VHS 1 and 2. You know, watch Tales from the Dark Side. Watch the series and the movie. Watch anything else other than this, because this is a disappointment. There's no reason why it should be called Creepshow. It's not good.
Zach, is this better than Creepshow 1?
No. Like I said, I'm giving it a 0.5. This is by far the worst movie we've watched for franchise fatigue. One of the worst movies I've ever watched, really. So
I'm glad to be here for that.
Yes, thank you. It's a historic time, Marcelo. So, you guys have said it very well. I mean, it's just terrible in execution, terrible in conception. There are a couple of things, if they ripped them out of this nonsense and addressed them from a more mature, serious, stylized creep show way, they could have been good. We talked about those, but there's just so much garbage and bad comedy and bad acting and bad production values and just bad. So it's just so bad. So 1/2 a creep for me. What about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I give this 1 star. This is probably the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, I don't like this. Like, I'm looking through my list here of movies. So on Letterboxd, so now I've gone to everything to 1 star. So these are the movies that I've given 1 star so far. So Creepshow 3, Tokyo Drifter, which I really don't like Senjin Suzuki. Transporter 2, I gave 1 star. Hitchcock's Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I gave 1 star. An old silent film called The Patchwork Girl of Oz, I gave 1 star. Aliens versus Predator Requiem. Die Another Day. Sim City, A Dame to Kill For. Another Hitchcock film, Rich and Strange. Mission Impossible 2. And 2 more Hitchcock films, Juno and the Paycock and L Street Calling. So these are all movies that I don't like, but this takes the cake of being the worst. Like, I would rather watch Alien versus Predator Requiem than this. But not, I would probably rather slit my wrists than watch either. So,
well, as of this date, now I only started using Letterboxd when we decided to start this podcast, Brandon. So that's where all my ratings and rankings come from. That this is the only 1/2 star film that I have in my Letterboxd. I have a couple of 1 star films: Jaws 3D and X-Men Origins Wolverine. So those are the 3 lowest films as of this recording on my Letterboxd.
Well, now I'm interested. I'm going to look that up real quick, what my bottom is. This is not the worst I've seen. At least this is, to me, it's not one of those so bad it's good movies. Not at all. Please don't make that mistake.
No.
It's only out of pure curiosity that got me through this. Just the fact that, I guess it was like enraged. I was enraged that this was a thing and how deviated it is from the original Creepshow concept. That kept me watching, but it's unbearable though. You know, it's not good. Not the worst thing I've ever seen, but
I've seen this twice now, and I am grateful. I will never ever watch this again.
Yeah, there's no reason to. No, I'm never going to see this again. Never. Please don't make me see this again.
Did you want to look up your 1 stars? Do you?
Yeah, I'm doing.
You don't
that
have to
as we speak. Sort by lowest first, my rating. So at the bottom, a talking cat is at the bottom. Battlefield Earth is down there.
Fair.
Oh, a movie I for sure have seen but have no memory of. It's called Civil Love, one of the worst things I've ever seen. Super low budget romance about the Civil War.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't even know how I got to watch that. Maybe it was on Netflix at one point, and I watched it like at 2 a.m. because like I was drunk and with my friends and like, let's just watch something bad. Yeah, that may be the worst thing I've ever seen. A movie called Civil Love. So there you go.
Okay, excellent. Right on. Well, let me ask you this question. Is this franchise fatigued, Marcelo, at this point?
I tried to give my honest thoughts last episode because if we're going through the series and we see like notable names were being left off, like you had Romero as a director in the first one and then he didn't come back for the second one, although he wrote the script, you know, and the decline in budgets and a decline in stories. I'm like, well, as much as I love Creepshow 2, there's a drop off in like the creative team leaving. And then we get to Creepshow 3. We see nobody from the creative team back. That's the thing. Although I already know the answer. Like, Creepshow, the series, is like a return to form in some way. But just after seeing this, just judging it just on the franchise as films alone, not good. The prospects are not good. Because, nobody's back. The creative team isn't there. This movie is tonally wrong for the series. Not good.
Zach?
Yeah, I mean, when it's this bad, it's time to pull the plug. Conceptually, sure, you can do more horror anthologies, but then just go watch other horror anthologies like Marcelo was talking about. There's other series out there for you. So, Creepshow, I'm sorry, you've soiled the brand, at least as far as movies go. As I understand it, TV show's doing pretty well. People seem to be responding well to it, and good for them. You know, a change in format after something like this is appropriate. So I'm glad they did that, because definitely the movie franchise is fatigued.
Well, now I'm going to challenge you on that, because I'm going to go back to our Mission Impossible 2, where you said, one stinker does not a franchise destroy. And you said after Mission Impossible 2 that, no, it was not fatigued.
Yeah, but this is way worse. There's a you can drop there is a point of no return and this franchise has found it, okay? So
excellent. Yeah, it's a tough call for me because the movie is so bad and the TV show is pretty darn good.
Well, you see, like, you can get though, like Marcel was saying, you can get this same style of stuff in other franchises.
Yeah.
It's not like I can't go anywhere else and see Mission Impossible. I guess James Bond, maybe, I don't know. But you know, that's a certain style and story, and this is a lot more there's a lot more things you could fill the Creepshow void in your life with.
I guess so.
And the argument can be made that Creepshow the brand as a film series maybe won't work because nowadays I don't know, maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, when was the last successful horror anthology that was released, you know, in like a good number of movie theaters?
Not popular, right? But that doesn't make them bad.
And then on that note, I can recommend another horror anthology that I thought was really, really good. It's called Nightmare Cinema. It has the essence of the great horror anthologies, and it was made last year. I think it's on Shudder. Like five directors came in, directed these horror segments. Really good, but limited release, you know, it almost went straight to streaming, but it did hit the festival circuit. It's possible to make good horror anthology films. It still is, but it's hard to do it, you know, with a big budget and a big wide release. So we might not see like a level of success for feature film horror anthologies on the scale of the first two Creepshows again, which is unfortunate.
Well, just to make it unanimous, I'll say, sure, this is pretty fatigued at this point, so we'll leave it here. But definitely to the listeners, if you haven't seen the TV show on Shudder, check it out, because there's some really great stuff in there. Marcelo, thank you so much for joining us for these three episodes. It's been a whole heck of a lot of fun. You're welcome back anytime. If you have any anthology or any series of movies you want to talk about, just let us know. We've got our next few months planned out, but we're looking for stuff to fill in later on in the year. But where can people find you when you're not trying to figure out whether or not that woman is a robot.
Oh, it's my daily pain in life, just trying to figure out who's a robot or not. Talk from Society. Go there. Find my work. Find my writing, my podcasting, other people's writing. I want to shout out Hannah Holloway. She has a new column on Talk from Society. She just wrote up We Need to Talk About Kevin, that fantastic horror film. She's handling this monthly series about women in horror called Beyond the Final Girl. Excellent stuff, so I recommend that. Seek that out. And go to our Patreon, patreon.com/talkfromsociety. Check out the bonus stuff we have there. So cool. There you go.
Excellent, right on. Zach, where can people find you when you're not eating a hot dog?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman series over there. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. And Brandon, when you there's so many things to choose from. Brandon, when you aren't turning into a rabbit, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on Trek FM with a show called The Line, which is all about Star Trek Picard. And you can find me over on the Fanda Podcast Network, as well as in our own independent feed with a show called Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, which is all about Alfred Hitchcock's films in chronological order. Thank you so much to Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson for being executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. And if you want to give us a rating and review, we'd really appreciate that. That does help us, helps people find the show. And you can find us as a network on Twitter at UFP Earth. You can email us contact@ufp.earth. And if you want to support us on Patreon, you can find us patreon.com/UFP Earth. Well, that's all we've got for you from the creep, boils and ghouls. Until next time, when we cover Blade with Lance Laster, who joined us for Terminator Salvation. Don't eat food off the ground.
Thanks for the hot dog, man.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.